You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. For a lot of kids, summer is an exciting time of activities and camp, but some researchers think that a little bit of boredom can be a good thing for children. We'll hear more in a bit. First, news out of California weeks ago left sexual assault victims' rights advocates disappointed. A judge gave a former Stanford University swimmer probation and 6 months in prison after he was convicted of raping an unconscious and intoxicated woman. But the next day, a Change.org petition had collected 191,000 signatures to recall the judge who delivered that sentence, Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Aaron Persky. In California, like Wisconsin, recalling a judge is a possibility because they're elected. Judge Jean D'Amato joins us now. She was a judge for more than 15 years and last presided in felony court, now serves as a reserve judge. She recently published an article about the question of punishing judges in the Wisconsin Law Journal. Judge D'Amato, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Veronica.
Now, you've looked at the legal history here in this state. When in Wisconsin have we seen similar calls for a judge to be punished or to be removed?
We've seen it twice. The first time was in the mid-70s in Dane County when Judge Archie Simonson sentenced three teenage boys to essentially home detention for raping their classmate. They had done it in a stairwell that was right near the choir room so that no one could hear her screams or protests. There was a huge outcry, and the outcry was not just to the sentence, it was to his remarks, which were that, how could you blame them? They were reacting normally to the sexually permissive atmosphere that he felt was present in Dane County, and what he thought was sexually permissive or promiscuous types of dress by women. The uproar continued because, in part, he kept giving interviews, both in Dane County as well as in the state and nationally, and continued to espouse his beliefs that the boys were reacting normally, that it was women's dress and a sexually permissive society that was responsible for their conduct. So a recall petition was initiated. It was the first recall that ever took place in the state of Wisconsin's history, and he was recalled as a result of the petitions being filed and an election was held. Moria Krieger became his replacement. She was the first woman judge in Dane County and served for 30 years after that. So he's the only example in Wisconsin of a judge who was recalled for behavior that the electorate found reprehensible.
So that was the public taking him to task, not agreeing with the opinions that he was putting out there in interviews. So when you look at that case here in Wisconsin, what parallels do you see when you look at the Stanford case?
Well, in the Stanford case, it also involves a sexual assault. The perpetrator of the sexual assault was older. He was 19, not a high school student. He was a student athlete at Stanford, and despite a jury convicting him of three felonies for the sexual assault, the judge sentenced him to, as you mentioned, probation with 6 months in jail. He thought that a sentence that that the convictions themselves would have a severe impact on him, and that a more severe sentence would be too much. What's difficult about the case in California is that it's some 40 years or so after the case in Wisconsin. So our attitudes about sexual assault have evolved since that time as a society and as a culture. In addition, what's hard for me to have seen in that case was that the judge had a mandatory minimum imposed by the legislature of at least a sentence of 2 years of imprisonment.
Right. Why can a judge only assign 6 months jail when the mandatory is 2 years?
you know, there's a judge in Wisconsin who sentences drunk drivers to less than the mandatory minimum. I don't get that myself. A minimum set by the legislature is a mandatory minimum, and you have to follow that law, in my view. So that's in part what caused such a huge furor in California, was probation in light of these three felony convictions when the mandatory minimum was 2 years at least of imprisonment.
So you mentioned that evolving attitudes are difficult when you look at this case, evolving attitudes towards sexual assaults. What in particular are you thinking about when you say that?
Well, for example, the idea that women's dress somehow invites sexual assault, or that a woman's, looking back, for example, at the Archie Simonson case in 1977, the teenage girl in high school was wearing a turtleneck and slacks. You know, how that could possibly be construed as inviting rape is, you know, hard to believe.
And these days, a lot of advocates, probably most people would say it shouldn't matter what you're wearing.
Precisely. How a man's self-control over his own sexual violence is somehow a woman's issue and needs to be addressed by her choice of clothing is crazy.
So right now we are talking to Judge Jean D'Amato. She was a judge for more than 15 years, last presided in felony court. She's now a reserve judge, talking about when it's appropriate and how it works to punish a judge, looking at the outcry after petitions went out to have California Judge Aaron Persky removed when he granted a 6 months jail sentence to a Stanford athlete convicted of raping an unconscious woman. So looking now at that petition, 191,000 signatures at one count there to recall, and I guess that's one option. What are other options now that you have this petition in action? How could this play out?
There is another petition drive also, and that's for impeachment of the judge. His situation is somewhat unique in that he's up for re-election but unimposed. In addition, he seemed to have been a judge up through now that was a respected judge, an even-handed judge, a moderate judge. So how the recall will play out, I don't know. Impeachment is a process that we have in Wisconsin as well, although no judge in Wisconsin has been impeached. But it's a legislative process where the assembly or the house of a state legislature would vote if they have corrupt conduct in office or for crimes and misdemeanors. They would vote for impeachment, and then there would be a trial in the Senate. We saw that with other public figures like Clinton, who was impeached but exonerated by the Senate. So we know the process from other political positions, not so much with judges. But there is an impeachment petition drive in California for Judge Persky as well.
Now, you mentioned his past history, and you said he had a reputation for being a moderate judge. And in this case, we're looking at his sentencing in one particular case. So how do you weigh that? What was it, 40 years as a judge with a reputation as a moderate, and one case which has raised a lot of outcry? How would that play out as public opinion and any of these motions move forward?
It's very difficult. Professor Dan Blinka at Marquette's Law School has commented that impeaching a judge or recalling a judge for one decision is a hard thing to see. Judges are elected to six-year terms, and he thought that's the record they should be judged on. And in fact, he's articulating the majority view that one decision shouldn't be outcome determinative of whether you stay in office or not. The other thing I notice is that it's always a lenient decision that, or typically, I should say, it's a lenient decision in sentencing that raises an outcry. Those who have sentenced defendants to unduly harsh or unconscionably harsh sentences don't seem to be called out in the same way, and I look at that as a factor as well.
When you look at Wisconsin, that case you began with, I think his name was Judge Archie Simonson, it sounds as though that recall was based on a single decision as well. So is there, you know, some other precedent maybe beyond Wisconsin that it can happen on a single decision?
Well, yes. And as I mentioned earlier, the fact that he kept giving interviews espousing his points of view about the society and about Dane County electorate and about women in Dane County didn't help his cause. It made it a matter of people losing confidence that he actually, as a judge, represented their values and mores. And Judge Persky, on the other hand, has said nothing. He has not publicly commented, and I give him credit for that.
We're talking with Judge Jean D'Amato right now, talking about the question of when and how judges should be punished after petitions went out to have California Judge Aaron Persky removed when he granted a lenient sentence, as some people see it, to a Stanford athlete convicted of raping an unconscious woman. And we want to hear from you on this. How do you think that that judge should have ruled in that case? Are you one of the people that believes that he should be recalled? Call 800-642-1234. How do you think judges should be punished based on their decision in one case? Or should we instead look at the choices over a period of time, a period of years maybe? And if you're in the justice system or an advocate of victims' rights, give us a call at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up our conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and right now we're picking up our conversation with Judge Jean D'Amato, talking about the question of when judges, if judges should be punished after petitions recently asked to remove California Judge Aaron Persky, who gave a 6-month jail sentence to the Stanford student convicted of sexually assaulting an unconscious woman. And we want to know what you think. How do you see Judge Persky's decision? Do you see certain biases in this case? And tell us if you believe that judges should be removed based on a single decision or punished in some manner. And do you think we have the right mechanisms to do that? Call us at 800-642-1234. And how does the decision impact the conversation about campus rape for you? Call 800-642-1234. And we'll take our first caller now. We have Micah with us first in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Micah.
Hi. I had recently read, and maybe you can confirm if this is true or not, that he tried a very similar case, I think it was only 2 years ago, where a young black man who was not wealthy or affluent or in school was charged with very similar charges, and he actually pled guilty for a plea deal, acknowledged his guilt, said he was sorry, apologized to the victim, and got close to the maximum sentence. Whereas then just a couple years later, he gave, you know, the rich white kid in school who went to his school as an athlete a break for very similar charges, even though that individual has never admitted his guilt. He and his father are still claiming that he didn't do anything wrong. You know, he's making up all these excuses, saying, well, he's going to start a program to teach kids about the danger of alcohol, as if that made him do anything. And so when he keeps saying, well, is it right to pull a judge over one case? It's not one case. It's viewing cases of similar incidents side by side.
Micah, thanks for that. Now, I'm not familiar with the second case that Micah mentioned, Judge D'Amato, but if there were to emerge a pattern that showed that perhaps this was an issue of concern in Judge Persky's rulings, how would that change things?
Micah raises an interesting issue, actually a couple of issues. The first is a racial disparity, it sounds like, if I understood his question correctly. There's two things I want to say. One is that's something a judge should always be checking on. I used to do that from my first month on the bench. Was I sentencing someone differently because of the color of their skin? Was I sentencing them more harshly or more leniently, depending on their ethnic background? I did a constant check to make sure that if this person, if it was a black person in front of me, I would say, if this was a white person, would my sentence be different? And I think judges have an ethical obligation to monitor their behavior in that way when they're sentencing. The other point he raises that interests me is the attitude between the two different defendants that he described. The first accepted responsibility by pleading guilty, and Brock Turner in California, the one sentenced by Judge Persky from Stanford, was had a jury trial and was convicted by a jury of three felonies. His father's attitude was, I found, truly shocking. It was, it shouldn't be a harsh sentence. It shouldn't even be jail time or much less prison time, because it was just, quote unquote, 20 minutes of action. That's an appalling attitude, and it would have concerned me as a judge sentencing someone like Brock Turner if a parent espoused that kind of an attitude, because that would lead me to wonder seriously if the character of the defendant was formed by that those kinds of attitudes in the household. One of the things that's hard as well about judging judges' sentences, when we're not the ones actually doing the sentencing, is we usually don't hear all that said in a courtroom. We don't read the things that are submitted to a judge, and yet we're judging that sentence. So that's a difficulty. We heard in the Stanford case from the victim, because that was published on social media, and so that her whole statement, which was a lengthy one and a heartrending one, was available, and that contrasted with Brock Turner's father's statement was difficult at best.
Let's take another caller now. Thanks to Micah for his call, and we go next to Jessica in Oliver. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I was 16 when I was raped, and people who don't have this experience, they cannot reach inside of themselves and know what it's like or to feel what it feels like. Self-confidence and self-respect and all of these good things get taken away from you. And it takes years, if ever, that anyone can actually recover from that kind of thing, because it just deep down inside of yourself is violated. And you know, people that don't go through this and feel it themselves really have no idea what people go through for the rest of their life.
Jessica, I'm so sorry for what you went through. I'm glad you called us to share your voice here on this. And I'm curious about how you responded to the rape victim statement on social media that affected a lot of people.
You know, those people should never be criminalized. You know, victims are way too often criminalized. And, you know, I went back to my mother at the time and nothing was ever done. So, you know, even today, people keep that secret because they don't want to be singled out and pointed at, you know, that kind of thing.
Jessica, I'm very sorry to hear of your situation. And you bring up such an excellent point, and that's the impact on the victim versus the impact on the defendant in a sentence. Saying that the judge in California said that there would be a severe impact on the young man, and what the victim's statement had said in clarion tones is that the impact on the victim is long and lasting and deep and frightening.
We're talking with Judge Jean D'Amato right now about the Stanford rape case and the verdict there from Judge Persky, which a lot of people saw as too lenient. And Jessica brought up, you know, the feelings of the rape survivor, and a lot of people, I think, were exposed to those feelings in a way maybe they hadn't been before, thanks, as you said, to the social media publishing of the complete statement, which a lot of people had very emotional responses to. Is that something new, do you think, in the way that we as a public and maybe eventually in the judicial system perceive the damage of rape?
Well, judges should take that into consideration. When we sentence, for example, in Wisconsin, we take into consideration three primary factors: the gravity or the seriousness of the crime, secondly, the character of the defendant, and thirdly, the interests of the community, both for punishment as well as for rehabilitation. The victim's point of view comes across in two of those factors: in the gravity of the crime and the aggravating circumstances of the crime, and again, as a member of the community who's been impacted by the crime, so that the community's interest in punishment and rehabilitation have to be viewed in part through the eyes of the victim and the victim's point of view.
And looking at some of the options we've talked about so far, as we get ready to wrap up here, not a lot of time left, but we talked about impeachment and recall. What about some sort of reprimand or censure? Is that something that might be on the table?
Yes. Discipline of a judge is available in Wisconsin, as it is in every state. And in our state, it's through the Judicial Commission. They start the procedure. They can issue a private reprimand, or they can issue I've forgotten. I know they have two options there, and it's slipping my mind. I apologize. A private reprimand or a warning. The Wisconsin Supreme Court itself can impose discipline on a judge, which is a public reprimand or a period of suspension that can vary from 60 days to 90 days to up to 2 years, or for the remainder of the judge's term.
And we leave it there. Judge D'Amato, thank you so much for joining us today.
Veronica.
That was Judge Jean D'Amato. She was a judge for more than 15 years, now serves as a reserve judge, joining us there to talk about cases in which a judge could be punished after a lot of people called for the removal of Judge Aaron Persky, who sentenced a Stanford student athlete to probation with 6 months in jail for sexual assault. This is Central Time.